This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, a record number, over 80 million people watched last night's debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I was there at Hofstra University. Was there a winner in last night's debate? I'll talk about it with former Liberty University debate coach Brett O'Donnell. And I'll also get your take on the debate a little bit later here on Washington Watch. Also, we'll get an update from Capitol Hill as Congress goes down to the wire once again in crafting a short-term funding measure that sets up yet another showdown in the lame duck Congress in December. Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama joins us for that conversation. And remember, Homeland Security Secretary Jay Johnson hinting that the federal government might need to take over the election system. Well, state elected leaders are leaving nothing to chance. Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp explains what state election officers are telling Congress. That's coming up a little bit later here on Washington Watch. A lot to cover in an hour, so let's get going. Look, you can find out more at TonyPerkins.com. If you miss anything on your way home, check it out later, TonyPerkins.com. Also, we've got some neat resources there for you. We've got a short 3-minute video. It's a great resource. I encourage you to take it and share it on your Facebook or, share it with friends, email it around. It is a platform comparison, a party platform comparison. It takes the Republican Party platform, which is the most conservative probably in the party's history, compares it to the Democratic Party platform, which is probably the most liberal in that party's history. And so some of the key fundamental issues that your friends and family would want to know about, it's about 3 minutes long. Again, you can find that at TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right. This presidential election has been nothing but twists and turns and riveting developments. And last night's debate, the first head-to-head confrontation between GOP presidential nominee Donald Trump and the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton, you know, it met expectations. It was different, definitely different. Now, fireworks were guaranteed, and did they go off? Both candidates traded barbs, attacks, and counterattacks. But did anyone gain ground? Well, joining me this afternoon to discuss that is the former debate coach at Liberty University and as a consultant to many different political campaigns, Brett O'Donnell. Brett, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
Was there a, right out of the box here, I'm going to ask you the question, because you've told me within the first 30 seconds you got to make your point and then you unpack it. So was there a winner in last night's debate?
Well, I think last night's debate was, yes, there were two winners. There was a winner of the first half of the debate and a winner of the second half of the debate. Donald Trump won the first 30 minutes of the debate, and Hillary Clinton won the last half of the debate. And that's because in the first 30 minutes of the debate, which in my estimation are the most important 30 minutes of any presidential debate, any of the three, actually, Trump was on offense, he was on message, and he had Hillary Clinton on her heels, particularly on the trade issue, TPP, NAFTA, jobs, and the economy. He really had her almost blemished in terms of her reaction to the trade issue. And so I thought he was good and strong in the first 30 minutes. In the last 45 minutes of the debate, I thought Clinton was a little stronger because she kept him on defense, and he missed a lot of opportunities to really go after her. For example, on the Iraq War, he didn't have to worry about defending himself on the Iraq War. All he had to do was turn to her and say, "Secretary Clinton, you were for the war. You voted for the war. And it was your actions after the war that caused the problems that we're in right now." And on taxes, he could have went after her. On cybersecurity, he could have went after her on her emails.
Right.
So there were lots of opportunities for him to really get on offense against her. But in the first 30 minutes, I thought he did a very effective job of painting her as a 30-year politician who has been ineffective, changed her positions on most issues, and now is running to be president, but didn't do anything when she had the chance. So I thought he was pretty effective in the first 30 minutes.
Well, there was an issue set that he understood. I mean, jobs, trade, those were things he felt very comfortable with. And I think you're absolutely right. As I was, we were watching there with the media at the university last night, very effective in that first portion of the debate. But there came a turning point when the issue set kind of shifted. I think the questions about his personal tax returns, I think he handled fairly well, but I think that kind of threw him back a little bit, and he became a little more defensive in nature. Now, I want to ask you another aspect because, you know, I've been in debates and all transparency here. You've also you've coached me, provided information to me, so I'm a student of this as well. But in a political debate where you're debating a woman, it's a little bit different sometimes. Now people would say, well, it's not we're you know, those things don't apply anymore. This is 2016. In reality, they do. Could it be that he was holding back a little bit because he didn't want to be seen as beating up on a woman?
Well, it could be. I mean, I thought that he, I thought he walked the line with being respectful of her just fine. He may have interrupted her a few too many times, but, you know, debates are about aggression, and as long as, and offense, and as long as you don't cross the line, as long as you didn't make things personal, I don't think he would have been viewed as crossing the line for going after her very forcefully on her emails, very forcefully on the Clinton Foundation. So,
which we hear, we heard nothing about the Clinton Foundation. We heard nothing about Benghazi. They spent about a quarter of the time on the birther issue, which I think most Americans could care less about. But there was there was a real lack of substance, and a part of that I put onto the moderator.
Yeah, if you notice in the debate, Lester asked three very defensive questions. They were personal questions of Trump. He asked about the birther issue. He asked about the stop and frisk issue. He asked about his tax returns. He also asked about, it was four actually, asked him about his statement about her stamina and appearance. He didn't ask any of those questions of Hillary Clinton, which gave her wide openings to swing away at Trump. But nonetheless, he could have turned a lot of those moments into offense against her, and he didn't have to do it in a personal way. I mean, on the birther issue, he could have very easily just brushed that aside and said, look, I believe Hillary Clinton started this. Go talk to Sidney Blumenthal. But this isn't what the issue that I get talked to about. People care about, and he could have turned it right back to message. People care about jobs. People care about safety and security. Hillary Clinton is terrible at both of those things, and off to the races he could have went. The same thing's true with some of the other things that he played defense on last night, where he had good opportunity to just, you know, even in spite of the moderator, really get on offense. And that's what I hope he does next time. I hope that, and he doesn't need to make it personal. He doesn't need to make it about Bill Clinton's various affairs. There's probably not enough time in a debate to talk about that subject. So what he really needs to make it about is her failures as a politician and her failures while she was the Secretary of State, her personal failures with email and the Clinton Foundation, and her public failures, Benghazi, Libya, the Middle East, Russia. All of those things are things that he could really generate a lot of offense on without having an audience think for a second that he was crossing the line because she's a woman.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Brett O'Donnell, my guest, talking about last night's presidential debate. Now, Brett, a little bit different when you were, I would think, when you were doing debate, championship debate teams at Liberty University. Then you transitioned to do work with presidential candidates. You worked with McCain. You worked with Michelle Bachmann and with others. How much in a presidential debate does substance over presence matter? I mean, a lot of times it's really kind of how you handle yourself, how you come across, more so than the policy positions that you're able to articulate.
Yeah, the presentational aspects of a debate are extremely important. Performance matters. I think you saw a little bit of that last night where, you know, in the first half of the debate, she was really on her heels because he had great presence in the debate. I mean, he was going right after her and had her backed up pretty good. In the second half of the debate, I think the tables were turned somewhat, and you saw him send off some signals presentationally that were not as positive. So presentation matters, but it also matters in terms of how you talk about issues. You know, Clinton is a machine in terms of her knowledge of policy, but she's not very good at talking to the heart. Donald
right.
Trump is just the opposite. He is very good at talking to the heart, not as good on policy. Policy matters some in that you have to convince folks that you're competent. But the most important things are you have to get people to believe that you get them, that you understand them. And then you have to, they have to like you. And she's just not very likable. She's not been good at that. And last night she didn't do anything to improve that. If you listen to her performance, it wasn't that her performance was that great at all. I mean, if you listen to her performance, it was basically a string of talking points and facts without any vision at all. And so if he ups his game in the second and third debates, I think he can outdebate her.
My take from last night as I was there watching was that it was basically a draw. I don't think that anybody really got the bounce or will get the bounce out of that debate that many were hoping for. I don't think he lost ground. I don't think she gained ground. I think they're pretty much where they were when they went into it. What do you think?
Well, that could be true. Here's the only thing I would say. That is, like I said, I think the first 30 minutes are the most important 30 minutes in any debate. And I also think that because viewership was extremely high, people watch the debate for themselves, and they're going to reach their own judgments. And so what we say as pundits may not matter as much when it's a debate that, as much as a debate that they don't watch, that they just sort of listen to the coverage of.
Right.
A lot of people watch that debate, and he hasn't been held to conventional wisdom for any of the debates so far. And his message on trade is a message that resonates. And so who knows what will happen, but it could be that, once again, Donald Trump flies in the face of conventional wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's happened almost every time. It's happened almost every time. I think you're absolutely right. Brad O'Donnell, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, Brad O'Donnell. Find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. And a little bit later, I'm going to get your thoughts. What do you think about the debate last night? Was there a winner? We'll talk about it a little bit later. But first, coming up, Congress is coming down to the wire for another funding bill, temporary funding fix for the federal government. Congressman Mo Brooks joins us on the other side of the break. Then we're going to be talking about the election system with Secretary of State Brian Kemp. All that and your calls still to come here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Israel in March, March 9th through the 17th. We'll be going to the land of the Bible, the Holy Land. We'll be seeing so many places every day. The days are just full of things you've read about in the Bible. And one of the things that I enjoy about our trip is wearing people out. And we'll be wearing folks out during our trip of Israel, because I know that when folks pay to go to Israel, they want to see it all, and we'll be seeing it all, including Bethlehem, Jericho, Jerusalem, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, Nazareth, and much, much more. Won't you join us on this special tour of Israel in March? For more information, just call us and we'll send you a brochure at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5, or go on the web at twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
I'm a widow. I've worked for a bank for 31 years, and I've been retired now for 10 years.
Myrtle Norris comments on her experience with the AFA Foundation.
I had a lot of financial questions, and Dan Celia was, he answered my questions, and he helped me with a lot of decisions that I made. And then the charitable gift came up, and he explained that to me. I decided to get it, and I'm sure glad I did, because I know now that money is in a place that I know God wants it to be, and also get my monthly income from it. I believe in the AFA and what they're doing, because they're working for us.
Learn how the AFA Foundation can work for you. You can contact the AFA Foundation through Facebook, on our website, afafoundation.net, or call us at 800-326-4543, extension 345. Thank you for supporting the American Family Association.
This message is provided by Liberty HealthShare.
You can control your health care with Liberty HealthShare.
Liberty HealthShare gives you freedom from health insurance.
You can finally make the right decisions for you and your family.
It's not insurance, it's medical cost sharing.
You can affordably control the cost of your medical expenses.
It's a group of individuals sharing the cost of health care. This is based on shared values.
You are not alone.
With Liberty HealthShare, you're part of something bigger. A group of people who care for and support one another.
Join the movement of people who share in medical costs and change the way you pay for your health care forever.
It's easy. Visit healthsharefamily.org right now. healthsharefamily.org. Enroll today.
Liberty Health Share.
Together, we're changing health care for good. Check out healthsharefamily.org. healthsharefamily.org. Not available in Pennsylvania.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, the website, TonyPerkins.com. By the way, today, you know what today is? Do you? I know it's Tuesday. But it's also National Voter Registration Day. If you are not registered to vote, this would be a great day to do it because you're actually running out of time. In fact, voting in some states begins very soon, like I think next week. To find out more about registering to vote, actually it's so easy to do today. You can do it online. Go to TonyPerkins.com, and you'll see a link there to the Values Bus Tour. All right, and on that site, we have a link where you can actually register online, right there from the convenience of your computer. All right, go to TonyPerkins.com, go to the Values Bus Tour, and follow the links over to register online. All right, we've, periodically talking about this. It seems like we talk about it all the time, and that is the government funding measures, okay? Under Barack Obama, we don't actually pass appropriations bills that are signed into law. We do what's called continuing resolutions. We just keep spending, doing a kind of a short-term CR, continuing resolution gets us to another spot, and then we do another one. Well, right now, we're hours away, actually the end of the month, it's right here on us, the current funding ends, September 30th. And so Congress is working to try to come up with a short-term fix that will get Congress into December to do another funding bill, right in the middle of a lame duck session of Congress. Some say that's a bad way to do business. I'm among them. But what might be the outcome? Well, joining me now to talk about this is one of the members of Congress that's been trying to bring attention to this broken system of funding that we've been pursuing. He represents Alabama's 5th Congressional District, Congressman Mo Brooks. Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
My pleasure.
All right, so what's the latest? Where are we on this this short-term CR that's being considered on Capitol Hill?
Well, the Democrats in the Senate, Harry Reid in particular, are pushing for provisions in the CR that he hopes Republicans would reject in order to justify a government shutdown. So that's what's being wrestled over with right now. One of the things the Democrats are insisting on, by way of example, is new funding for Planned Parenthood-type facilities in Puerto Rico. For those who don't know, Planned Parenthood is one of the largest abortion facilities in the United States of America. Then you've got a push to put into the funding money for Flint, Michigan. Flint, Michigan's Democratic Party leaders, elected officials, unfortunately, have been totally incapable of ensuring that Flint, Michigan has a drinkable, potable water supply. And so the Democrats, rather than pointing the fingers at themselves or rather than fixing it themselves, they want America's taxpayers to pay for the mismanagement of water supply in Flint, Michigan. And there are probably a number of other things that the Democrats are pushing for. They believe right now that a government shutdown is their best chance of capturing the Senate, helping Hillary Clinton be elected president, or perhaps making substantial inroads in the House of Representatives. And so that's what's going on right now. I don't know how that's going to be working its way through the United States Senate. If past history is any guide, probably the House of Republican leadership and the Senate Republican leadership will cave to the Democrats on this and other issues in order to avoid the appearance of Republicans being responsible for a federal government shutdown.
What is amazing to me, Congressman, is that every time we get to this point, if the Republicans don't capitulate and give in to most times unreasonable demands by the Democrats, they're the ones that are accused of shutting down the government or wanting to shut down the government. But the Democrats here, who I've been up on the Hill several times the last few weeks talking with different members, and I mean, this is all politics. As you laid out, there is a desire to use this to somehow alter the outcome, primarily in the Senate, of the Senate elections. One of the theories is that Harry Reid's doing all he can to try to keep members of the Senate that are in competitive races here so that they can't go back and campaign on the Republican side. But why is it that it is the Republicans that are always expected to capitulate, compromise, give in, however you want to describe it, on their core principles that they campaigned on, but the Democrats, they're the ones that are, you know, held up by the media as being the ones that are simply doing their job?
Well, if you look at the mainstream print media, Washington Post, New York Times, Los Angeles Times, and whatnot, or the mainstream television media, CNN, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, NBC, and whatnot, they are all basically communication wings of the Democratic Party. And so they collectively conspire or independently reach the same conclusion that if anything's wrong, it's the Republicans who are at fault, and it can't be their allies, the Democratic Party. And so they collectively put out the image of what is happening in Washington, D.C. By way of example, the 2013 federal government shutdown, the Republicans quite clearly in the minds of most voters were responsible. That tells you that the communications wing of the Democratic Party, the TV, print media, highly successful in placing blame on the Republicans, even though the only thing the Republicans demanded at the end game was, gosh, if Obamacare is so good, let's make the White House employees subject to it. And healthcare.gov is not yet ready for prime time rollout, so let's delay that for a year until such time as that website is in proper form. And Republicans were correct on both of those issues. But to hear the way the Democrats propagandized it and the mainstream news media copied what the Democrats were promulgating, it was like we were holding out for a total and complete repeal of Obamacare.
Right.
And that simply was not the case. And you can look at the congressional record and see the votes that were cast to determine for yourself as a voter who's telling the truth on this issue. But getting past the fog of the communication wings of the Democratic Party, that's very, very difficult to do.
Yeah, the fog and the smoke and everything else. Congressman Mo Brooks, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you for what you're doing.
I appreciate it. Congressman Mo Brooks of Alabama. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about elections. Is the federal government trying to take over the election system? We'll talk about it. Don't go away.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
A couple of things in the markets that we need to talk about, and one is oil prices. Oil prices are sliding more than 1% after Iran and the Saudis kind of threw a cold, wet towel on the flames of production deal happening. There's a surprise. I've been talking about how laughable this is, that the oil futures were going up on the idea that they're going to come up with some sort of production deal. Talked about it just yesterday once again, that it's not likely to happen, but it looked like oil traders were buying into the notion that it could happen. Well, it doesn't look like it is. So we're seeing oil prices tank right now, and we'll have to wait and see how it shakes out, but shouldn't be any surprise to anybody. Also, you heard me talk at length about short-term interest rates. I have talked about the idea now for a year and a half or so about getting into short-term bonds. I have asked people to sell out of your long-term bond mutual funds some time ago, even some long-term municipal bond mutual funds, and I know many of you did that. At my urging, well, apparently one of the largest fund managers in the world, managing $5 trillion, is suggesting this morning the same thing. So a little behind the curve, I continue to be surprised that everyone else seems to be lagging behind some of the things that we have talked about and been right about for some time. So I hope you have made that move to short-term bonds. If you haven't and you want to get in bonds, even treasury bonds, keep them short.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. And by the way, as I mentioned, today is National Voter Registration Day. Now, I know that if you listen to Washington Watch, that you are registered and you are voting, right? Well, just in case you happen to be crossing the dial and you picked up this program and you're not registered, go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over to the Values Voter Bus Tour, and there's on that site a place where you can register to vote online, okay? All right, speaking of that, a few weeks ago, Secretary of Homeland Security Jay Johnson suggested that his agency may need to take over the election system because the federal government does everything so well, all right? Well, they needed to do it to prevent foreign governments like Russia from hacking our system and affecting the outcome of the election. Well, I mean, I guess they could just put it in Hillary's bathroom. I don't know. Anyway, the National Association of Secretary of State sent a letter to Congress warning that nationalizing the election system would actually put the system at risk. Joining me to talk about this is Georgia Secretary of State Brian Kemp, who is a Republican. Secretary Kemp, we welcome you to Washington Watch. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Tony. It's great to be with you today.
Now, you have spoken out about this, been very vocal about this, that the system that we have in place, which is very decentralized, about 9,000 different election areas of jurisdiction, that it would be very problematic if this is nationalized, and you're communicating that to Congress. Why?
Well, it's just been, like you just said on the opening, there's not many things the federal government has done good at when they've taken over things like health care and other things. And I just feel like this is a constitutional duty of the states and the different jurisdictions having all these different ways that we count votes across the country actually helps keep this system more secure, and an uncentralized system is actually better in this regard. And I've been very outspoken in regards to that. Certainly have no qualms about working with Department of Homeland Security to, warrant off cyber attacks or share information. But I think them coming in to you know, take over our systems or even be involved in that process would be a step in the wrong direction, and I don't think it would make elections more secure.
Well, as laid out in the letter from the Secretary of State, who are the election officers from the various states, you point out in the letter that the way the system is set up, there's redundancy, there's protection, so that the systems are not online. So therefore, currently, as it is set up in these 9,000 different jurisdictions, our system couldn't be hacked. It actually is better protected under the jurisdictions that are currently watching it.
Well, that's correct. And I think there's been a lot of misinformation on this. I think even the department didn't really have a good handle on this, in my opinion, when this story broke about, you know, just what is potentially subject to being hacked. I mean, certainly the Democratic National Committee was hacked. Well, that has nothing to do with elections. There's been a couple of states that had their voter registration systems either hacked or manipulated, but that doesn't have anything to do with counting the votes. You know, the votes that are the electronic reporting that's done, election night reporting that's done on all of our websites, you know, after the polls close on election night, you know, that is not a certified result. That is all unofficial, has nothing to do with the actual vote count. The vote count is happening offline in secure processes, whether it's dealing with, you know, optical scan ballots, whether it's DRE, electronic voting machines, or other different mechanisms that are out there. And I think that's one thing that a lot of people didn't really understand. But like in Georgia, our system is not connected to the internet. The results are hand-delivered by law enforcement officials to our offices. We have all kinds of checks and balances there. And for the federal government to even get a handle on what we do in Georgia, I think would be hard on them. And certainly when you think about 9,000 jurisdictions across the country, it'd be just impossible to figure that out and almost impossible to hack that many systems to affect an election like the presidency or something
right.
of that nature.
And just to be clear, Secretary Kemp, there is no evidence that ballot manipulation has ever occurred in the U.S. via cyber attack. So this is all speculation on behalf of the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Right. And let me make myself clear, too. I mean, there's been people trying to manipulate elections. You can call it, you know, stealing, hacking, you know, elections mischief. For years, it didn't matter what kind of system we had, whether it was paper ballots or the old Lever machines, and certainly in today's technology world, people will try to do that, I'm sure, with elections equipment. But, you know, we work very hard every day to make sure that those systems are secure for those of us that do have those type things. And I think there's just a broad misunderstanding that's been out there with DHS and the public.
All right. Well, there is manipulation, like when those dead people vote and that sort of thing. But
that's a great point. There's other ways to manipulate the process if people aren't keeping their voter rolls clean.
Right.
You know, you got paper absentee ballots. I mean, we see absentee ballot fraud. We see vote buying. You know, you can disrupt an election by having disturbances at the polls or multiple polling locations, or even in natural disasters like we saw with Hurricane Sandy you know, several years ago. So there's many ways that can be affected, and we have to be ready and work on all of those type things.
Mr. Secretary, thanks so much for joining us. Great to have you on the program.
Have a great evening. Thank you, sir.
Have you noticed lately that healthcare premiums and college tuition are on the rise? Some say the government should provide them to citizens at no cost. The idea of offering such services for free through government programs is understandably attractive to many. However, the utopian socialist principles behind such ideas are inherently flawed, and in reality, their ends can only be achieved through unfettered government overreach. Down through the ages, socialism has only wrought destruction, and those who propose that an American execution of the same policies would somehow reap a different result do so at their and our peril. With American interest in socialism on the rise, it is vital that we understand its foundational philosophies so that we can combat this fatally flawed government solution to a human problem. Watch former Congressman Bob McEwen lead an informative discussion about socialism and its true consequences at frc.org/McEwen. That's frc.org/MCEWEN.
Consider serving the Lord with Friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Hello, I'm John Nyhoff, the president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi. Wesley Biblical Seminary provides a solid foundation based upon the inerrancy of the Bible and the call to holy living. Online or at our Jackson, Mississippi or Greenwood, Indiana campuses, our academically rigorous learning community will add incredible value to your Christian experience. Wesley Biblical Seminary, where faith and learning ignite with passion for Christ. WBS.edu.
Volunteers are ready, and the time is almost here. October 8th through the 15th will be 8 days of hope for flood victims in Black River, South Carolina. The ministry and those volunteers need our support as they go forth in Jesus' name. Here's 8 Days of Hope President Steve Tiber.
Our budget for this trip will be about $530,000. God's going to send every penny. He always does. Please pray for 8 Days of Hope. We've got the perfect opportunity to help hundreds of families rebuild their homes.
Please pray for the leadership of 8 Days of Hope as they facilitate this massive undertaking. Pray for the safety of the volunteers as they work. Pray that God would multiply His blessings for those people whose lives and homes were so damaged by flooding. Pray hearts will be open to receive the love of Christ. And pray that volunteers would share their faith and encouragement in love as opportunities arise. If you feel God has called you to give, you can make your donation at 8daysofhope.com.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com, if you're on Twitter, at TPerkins. By the way, let me remind you once again that this program is made possible by supporters of the Family Research Council all across the country, and I want to thank you, those of you who are supporting FRC, as we do our work here in Washington, D.C., and also take the information out across the country. If you'd like to be a part of the FRC family, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and join us, partner with us in bringing the truth to America. All right. Again, let me remind you, voter registration. If you are not registered, please register to vote. It's critical. It's essential. Every vote counts. In fact, I'm going to be talking about this. There's a race we were involved with in Arizona. Just was decided through a recount. 27 votes was the margin of victory. A congressional race in Arizona. Every vote counts. 27 votes. And there's been, obviously, some been decided by even smaller margins. But people all the time say, my vote doesn't count. It just really doesn't count. It counts. Believe me, it counts. Be registered, and then vote. Go to TonyPerkins.com, follow links over to the Values Bus Tour, and you can register there online. All right, 866-372-7234. Was there, in your mind, was there a winner in last night's debate? If so, who won? Who do you think won the debate, or was it a draw? Was it a tie? Was your mind changed at all by the debate last night? I want to hear from you. 866-372-7234. Be interesting to see. The polling data will come out here in the next day or so, and we'll see if someone got a bump from the polls. As Brett O'Donnell was talking about earlier, Donald Trump has kind of defied what's conventional about these presidential races, and he, you know, you'd think it's going to reflect poorly in the polls for him, but then he ends up doing well. I think I don't think it really will affect the standing of either of the two candidates. That's my personal view as I was there last night watching. I think that the my view is that you'll see Donald Trump will continue with what I think is a trend where he's gaining support. I don't think he hurt himself at all with that last night. I don't think he got a rocket. It wasn't like a rocket booster for him moving him forward. So anyway, that's my thoughts. I'll give you more, but I want to hear from you. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Ohio where Charles is on the line. Charles, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. I agree with everything you just said. I don't think anybody really won, but I kind of think he lost a little bit. The reason why I say that is because, as you've already said earlier in your program, other people have said, he just did not take the opportunity to attack her with all the things that he should have. I saw in his eyes, or at least what I feel like, what I saw, I'm hoping, is that he kept wanting to say things, but maybe has this, I'm going to save it attitude. I don't know if that's the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do, but, you know, maybe there's two more debates. Maybe he's just planning on unleashing the beast, so to speak, in one of the next two.
That's could be. Hoping. Could be, Charles. You could be right. I also think that he was, you know, trying to be restrained in some ways. And that's the fine line that he has to walk, because what has brought him to this point is that he has been willing to challenge the conventional wisdom of politics and be free-wielding and to speak his mind and to challenge. But I go back, and I know Brett is an expert at debate coaching. And it's, you know, you can go to the fine line, but you got to know what that fine line is when you're debating. And again, I do think that people see when a man is debating a woman. And I know, again, I've said this multiple times on the program. People say, well, that's a chauvinistic view. Look, it's just reality. There is a certain expectation that you will treat a woman in a respectful way. And so it's going up to that line, challenging the policies or the positions. The problem is a lot of Hillary's problems, or what I would say her vulnerabilities, I should say, are not just with policy holdings, but they're character issues. I mean, Benghazi, that was a judgment issue because it was a judgment and character issue because not only should she not, you know, protect those guys, but then she lied about it afterwards. And the issue of the emails. I mean, that's not just and he did go after her on that issue a little bit more. So fine line. It's a very fine line you have to walk. Charles, thanks so much for listening. Appreciate the call. Let's go to Arkansas where Wayna is on the line. Is that right? Arkansas. Hello, you there?
Hi.
All right, what's your first name?
Wayna.
Wayna, okay. That's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure. Wayna, welcome to Washington Watch.
No, it's Wayna. But anyway, you know, I think with all the incredibly gifted communicators Trump has around him, like Gingrich and Giuliani, he really should give in and admit that he needs and receive some coaching. You know, I think he was trying so hard not to be snarky and mean, which he needs to not be because that turns most people off big time, but he could still be aggressive, and I think he needs to open himself up to receive some assistance at learning how to bring out those things without being juvenile, you know, mm-hmm. the way he was in the primaries, because that would turn off so many people. But he needs to make his points, and I think he wasn't ready to do that. He was ready to answer whatever questions were asked, I guess, but didn't have his things ready that he was going to get to no matter what, like she did. And he needs to submit to some of that coaching.
That's a good observation. Thanks, Wayna. Thanks so much for the call. Appreciate you listening to Washington Watch. Let's move on to Virginia, where Amy is on the line. Amy, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi. Well, I have to tell you, Trump is a doer. He's not a debater. And so, honestly, people who tell me that they're not sure he wants to be president because he doesn't seem very inspired or interested, I think he's just been worn down by all that is required, because he is the type of person that just wants to get out there and do. And I think that he is the right person. You know, I wanted someone else. You know, I think we're all saying that. But I do think that Trump could actually accomplish things if he ever, you know, if he gets in. And also, we don't want the debate winners. We've had the debate winners in previous elections. We don't want them. We want the people who are obvious, just honest, maybe not the most articulate, but they have the best interest of the country. And I think, frankly, the way Trump expressed himself, he wasn't as good as she was. She probably did win the debate if, you know, you want to go by, you know, who was the most skilled person. But I think he came across as very genuine, and I personally, you know, liked his performance, although he missed a lot of opportunities. I agree with that. And one other thing I want to say, you mentioned voter registration. Is it possible that people would consider, when you're in the grocery store, when you're wherever you are, could you please go up to complete strangers who look like they might be a little bit open to, you know, to you, and just ask them if they're registered, you know, to vote, you know, bring it up. And if they're not, urge them, have registration forms on your, you know, on you, and hand them one. And you know what else you can actually do? If you have a smartphone, you can register someone right then and there. I'm in Virginia. We have another couple of weeks. There are lots of people not registered. In fact, 1 in 6 people vote in a presidential election. Maybe it's a little higher this year. I don't know. 1 in 6. That's 5 out of 6 not voting. Could we? We the American people are going to have to take control. The Republican parties in the different states just aren't doing it. And so if we don't get people registered, we have to actually go out there like an army of people who just go out and, as you're shopping, doesn't have to be anything you do special, but be ready to go up to people. And I've been doing this for a while. And, you know, I'm getting, you know, some people are surprised that, you know, I'll tell them about, I mean, it's amazing ignorance. And so I've gotten some people now who are voting for Trump who were not going to vote before. They were going to vote independent or whatever. So I just want to, I know you have other callers, but let me just put that out there. Please think about going up to complete strangers in the stores and asking them if they're registered, and just start the conversation and have them ready. You know, and you'll get more than, you know, if you don't do anything, we won't get anywhere. And we're going to lose our state. We're going to lose Virginia if people don't actually do
that. Hey, all right, Amy, great call, Amy. Thanks so much for that encouragement. And folks, this is, you know, people ask all the time, what can I do? Well, Amy just gave you something you can do. You can actually register people to vote. There are multiple tools out there today with technology to make that happen. Of course, we have one of the initiatives we have here at the Family Research Council, our culture impact teams with our churches. If your church does not have a culture impact team, contact me. All right, we'll get you connected with someone that can help you get one set up. You can just email me, tony@tonyperkins.com, and we'll get you the information, because through our culture impact teams, we've got, I don't know, about 8,000 of them across the country. They do voter registration in the churches. In fact, we're doing it at our church. This past Sunday we did it. We're going to do it every Sunday up until 30 days before the election, which is a cutoff in my home state of Louisiana. But it's important that we're registering people to vote. And that you, because you can't make a difference unless you're participating. You can't make a difference from the sidelines. All right, 866-372-7234. Going to work in a couple more phone calls here. Let's go to Tennessee, where Shirley is on the line. Shirley, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you so much. I just wanted to say I watched the debate last night, and then I listened to the commentary afterwards. And if you notice, 2-1, people kept calling me and saying they were going for Trump. They feel like Trump won it. So a lot of people I'm hearing on the stations this morning are feeling like maybe Clinton got it, but I don't think so. When you look at his honesty, his sincerity, you can see that he's not a part of the establishment, and he may not have been the most articulate. But I feel that it came clear to me. One of the callers said Clinton is wearing the appropriate color because she's got the blood of the soldiers on her hands, and they cut him off before he was able to finish that, which I found interesting. But they let Clinton speakers speak, however, and the most they could say is they were angry that the mic didn't get cut off from Trump. But Trump mentioned something that everybody needs to hear. Clinton's been there for at least 16 to 24 years, and she hadn't done anything that she's promising, and she's not going to do it this time. So they got a false hope in her. And the second thing that hopefully people heard and will hear over and over again, because it's a fact, is that Trump, he said, we have a financial problem, and he wants to make America great again. And I'm going to tell you, as a businessman, I believe that he could help with the financial situation that we're in. Hillary's not going to be able to do that. So if people want to starve and yet get all these supposed rights, gay rights, rights to marry where they want, rights to keep people from being able to sell flowers or bake cake, you know, rights to jail folks for nothing, basically, then they vote for Hillary. If they want to murder babies and murder people, they vote for Hillary. But if you want to feed your family and yourself, you probably want to go for the man who can get that job done, and that's Trump. He's got a better plan than hers. I feel that he won, and I've been undecided. Thank you.
All right, Shirley, thank you so much for calling. Yeah, she was laying out a lot of facts there, and it reminded me yesterday I was at the hotel riding over to the debate venue with Don King, the boxing promoter, which was kind of a— I mean, just there was like four of us in a Suburban we were going over, and it was like one of those things. You know, I didn't think I would be riding in a car with Don King a week ago, but he just went on a tear. I mean, a tear about Hillary Clinton and what she has done, not as a candidate, but as a politician, in particular in the black community. Which I was like. Too bad I'm not recording this. Anyway, one of those interesting things that I had the opportunity to experience. By the way, thinking back a couple of things last night that were brought up here that I was reminded of in these callers. Trump, you know, they went after him on his tax returns, okay? And I don't know why he hasn't filed, you know, presented his tax returns. He says he's under an audit, so I don't care. But what I liked about him is he doesn't apologize. He doesn't apologize because he's been wealthy. I don't hold it against him because he's been successful. You see, in the eyes of progressives, if you've been successful on your own, then you are somehow evil, and you need to be exposed. I don't care how much money he has. I don't have any problem with wealthy people. If they have worked and they have abided by the law, and they have been ethical and moral in the way they've done it, and they've— I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, what's wrong with people being successful? There was a time in this country when we didn't punish success. We promoted success. And so I think people are refreshed by that he doesn't apologize for being successful. All right, so much more to say, and so many more callers still on the line. Sorry, folks, we're out of time, but Lord willing, we'll be back again tomorrow. I hope you will as well. Hey, we're going to have some announcements, some news tomorrow. We're going to have some significant legislation we're going to be working with the Republican leadership to introduce tomorrow. We're going to be talking about that on the program, so be sure and tune in again tomorrow for Washington Watch. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, prayed, prepared, taken your stand, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.